I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich, and welcome to Town Square. Remember in the summer of 2015, the record-breaking temperatures, the unrelenting humidity, and few trade winds to bring even a tiny bit of cool relief? Now, imagine periods like that increasing. It could well happen, according to a study out this week. An international group of researchers and students coordinated through the University of Hawaii compiled data from over 1,900 cases since 1980, where heat has killed people. According to the study, 74% of the world's population will be exposed to heat waves by 2100 if carbon gas emissions continue to rise at current rates. Researchers say even if emissions are aggressively reduced, 48% of the world's human population will likely be affected. Today on Town Square, we'll talk about the study with lead author Camilo Mora and meteorologist John Bravender. And a bit more about them. Camilo Mora is an associate professor in the Manoa Geography Department. His current research focuses on the interlinks between biodiversity and human welfare. He's the lead author of this week's study published in Nature Climate Change. John Bravender is the new warning coordination meteorologist at the Central Pacific Hurricane Center. He's the primary liaison to the media and emergency management communities, and he oversees the office outreach program. The center issues excessive heat advisories when the heat index is 105 or higher for 2 days or more. And of course, you're here too, and if you'd like to join us, our number is 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, use that one, 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to us on the live stream and you want to get in on the conversation, you can by calling us at 877-941-3689. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the study and just to catch people up a little bit. Some people might have heard the two of us talking on Monday on the conversation when the study came out and really talking about some of the frightening parts of this. And let's at least lay some groundwork for that. This study forecasts an amazing amount of heat coming to us. And your point is also that it's not just the year 2100, it's also right now. Bridge that gap.
So actually, I think that that is perhaps the most interesting aspect of the paper, which is the fact that this is not something that will happen in the future. This is something that is already happening. What we did was to look at places around the planet where people had died because it got to be too hot. So we went to those cities and those times to find out what were the climatic conditions on those places that make those conditions so bad for people. And what we found is that there is this very interesting threshold between temperature and humidity. Certain combinations of temperatures and humidities make the conditions lethal to people. So after having that threshold, what we decided to investigate was how common are those conditions exceeded already. And what we found is that 30% of the world's human population today lives on places where that threshold is exceeded for at least 20 days a year. 30% of the world's human population, so this is already pretty bad and couldn't be a better week for that paper to come out in a week that we had a heat wave in New York last week, another one in New York as we speak, sorry, in California as we speak. There is one in Portugal that triggered a massive fire, Spain, now London, and this morning I just got a phone call from Russia because there is a heat wave being triggered there as well. So yeah, unfortunately, this is already happening, and because the planet is warming, we have two choices right now. One is more of this, and the other one is a lot more of it. So we don't have anything good that we can tell you will happen from this, and I don't think people should expect anything good to happen when you see the massive abuse that we have in our planet. You cannot expect that something good can happen after all of these abuses that we have had on the climate and nature on this planet.
It's frightening to hear that, you know, the choice is bad or terrible, which is, I think, what you said on Monday. And to think that somehow, even with the most aggressive mitigation, that you might not be able to affect the kind of change that would make it a good outcome. That's a very tough idea for people to wrap their heads around, but you're saying that we better do it, and we better do it quickly.
Well, that's exactly another point that we wanted to make, which is the fact that we shouldn't use the fact that this is going to get bad as an argument to do nothing, because doing nothing will be a lot worse. You know, unfortunately, again, we are climbing this ladder that we had to climb from, and the more we keep climbing this ladder, the worse it's going to get, right? So what we need to do is to slow down the pace at which we are climbing this ladder of us messing up with the planet.
John, I want to bring you into this conversation, too, because when people hear things about, you know, the heat and the heat index, and obviously your center issues those warnings when they happen, but also the connection between heat and humidity and why that's so difficult for humans to function.
Well, first, as Camilla said, the combination of temperature and humidity both create these dangerous conditions. And to try to get a better idea of capture that in one value, we have the heat index. It's a combination that combines temperature and humidity into an apparent temperature of what it would seem to feel like. As humidity increases, it's harder for sweat to evaporate from a body. You know, sweat is our natural cooling mechanism, and we can continue to sweat, but if it's really humid and you don't evaporate, you're not going to cool. And that's also the reason why more wind speed or stronger winds will help with that cooling effect. So the combination of high humidity and light winds is what gives us those most dangerous conditions.
And when we don't have those trade winds, as we've been seeing trade winds drop off, we feel the humidity more. And as people say, it's like a sauna out there, because it really is like a sauna out there.
Yeah, it was good that you referenced 2015. That was quite the summer. The other contribution here in Hawaii, a lot of our temperatures are gauged by the water temperature around the islands. Normally, trade winds blowing across the ocean cools off, brings in cooler air. If those ocean temperatures are warmer than normal, then we'll have that higher starting point. Warmer temperatures will lead to more moisture in the air as well. So when 2015, we're several degrees above normal, and that just exacerbated the problems that we would see as the trade winds broke down, as heat started to build up across the islands. It just made it feel that much worse.
If you're just joining us now for Town Square, we're talking about heat waves and a study that came out on Monday forecasting that they will continue and escalate. And the real question is, do you pay attention to this? Some researchers have said that all this information that's out there, they're really wondering if people are paying attention. And what becomes your strategy as we're dealing with a warming situation? And are you doing anything to even mitigate it in small ways that might help us not necessarily reach the terrible future that this study forecasts, or maybe just make it into less bad or less worse? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really tough to get your mind into this place that says there really isn't a good outcome that can be derived from all of this, even if we were to be very aggressive about that. And cities have been very aggressive about this. New York is looking at, we were talking about this a little earlier, greening itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, for New York, it's pretty bad because they suffer from these massive heat waves. And one of the things that happened today, back in the day, is the fact that during one of these heat waves, the whole electrical grid shut down, right? Because everybody decided to turn on their air conditionings. So it couldn't have happened at a worse time. When you had a heat wave, everybody wants to have AC, and there is no electricity. So it was the combination of just a lot of bad things happening there. Now, the choices for them were pretty serious, because that means that they needed to upgrade their electrical grid. That will cost them a lot of money. Also, the problem of the fact that they needed to upgrade their medical services, because a lot of people get sick, so you need to have more ambulances, more doctors, and things like that. So for them, the choice was, let's prevent these things from happening by making our cities greener. And there's a lot of good science to suggest that planting more trees on cities is actually something pretty good at cooling down the cities and minimizing quite a lot of the impacts of these heat waves.
Looking at Honolulu in particular and seeing the kind of building that we've been seeing in recent years and building that will likely continue, driving down certain streets and you feel like you're really in a concrete canyon, there aren't necessarily that many more spaces where you're going to be able to green. What then do you begin to look at as you see a city like Honolulu?
Oh, we had a lot of places where we can plant more trees. In fact, by the way, I just want to point out that last year I read a study pointing out the fact that we in Hawaii, we are cutting trees like nobody's business here in Honolulu. Instead of planting them and trying to fix this problem, we're actually cutting them down. It was this analysis that I saw taking satellite images where they showed that we are cutting down the trees. Now, we had a lot of spaces, and that's what New York is doing, is optimizing these areas where they can plant those trees. Unfortunately, planting those trees alone could be a bad thing, actually, if it is not well planned. So unfortunately, even the choice of making our city greener needs to have a lot of planning for it to be successful. And so just a word of caution there that, yes, we want to plant more trees, but that needs to be planned so that we don't plant the trees in the wrong places. But we had a lot of places where we can plant those trees. And by the way, Hawaii, we had transformed over 80% of the surface of the states. All of the natural ecosystems here, over 80% of it has been transformed, places where we can potentially plant trees already.
The point is that there is a lot of work that could be due. The question is, are you willing to do some of that work? And how do you feel about the study? Have you even paid attention to it? Excuse me. 941-3689 is our number if you call us from Oahu. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you were here in 2015, you know what that felt like. What if there were protracted periods like that with not very much wind, if at all, where it's hot, where it's humid, where you can't necessarily cool down? If we're all running inside to be in air-conditioned spaces, the draw on the grid, what does that whole scenario look like? Well, it's one that we don't have to think too much about because we've already had some experience with it. On the other hand, we may have more chances to have more experiences with it, according to the study that came out this week. We want to hear from you, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. As you look at the world, and you mentioned just this week all of the heat waves that we've been having reported in California, in Portugal, in Spain, now in Russia, others that are happening, how do you begin to mobilize people at that level when very clearly scientists have found it hard sometimes to politicize what they're doing or to be drawn into a political discussion? And now very clearly after Paris, there are many more of them who are willing to do that, but still there are many more that I think you'd like to call out.
Well, I think that we had a very hard way in front of us to make changes and fixing this problem. The first one is that we live on this cycle, very fast cycle of news, you know, and we suffer from short-term memory as well. Those heat waves are happening right now. I'm telling you, by Monday, people will have forgotten already about them. So that's one of the main issues. And unfortunately, it's a massive problem for heat waves because they are very sporadic. So people get super tense and they want to do something today. Tomorrow, there is not a heat wave anymore. And then, okay, let's go and play soccer now. So that's one of the problems that we have to deal with heat waves. Now, the other problem that is more revealing is something that I just realized yesterday, talking to some people that asked me the same question. How is it that people don't react to this? And watching the news yesterday in Hawaii, I realized that we had a massive problem of lack of education on people. As you pointed out earlier, this incapacity of people to have more critical thinking. You know, and it's a problem that unfortunately allows governments and interest groups to manipulate the opinions of people. And this is a problem not the general public. I'm thinking that this goes down all the way to our children. The two news that came out yesterday, for instance, was this problem of the poor quality of the teachers that are teaching our children here in Hawaii. And they point out these examples of a school teacher teaching Spanish without knowing how to speak Spanish or teaching calculus without knowing how to teach calculus. Right, so that's one piece of evidence that I saw yesterday. And the other one was President Trump and having all of these people following the guy despite the fact that he has done such a terrible things in the last 2 weeks. How is it that people is not capable of judging how bad this guy is given what just happened? So for me, what that suggests, though, is that as a society, we are failing in our capacity to have critical thinking about how bad this is. And that generates, again, what I think is the second problem to fix this problem is the fact that we had a very fundamental problem to mobilize people for them to start thinking critically, what are the solutions and how are we part of the problem as well.
You also face some of that problem too, John, when you try to mobilize people just to be prepared before hurricane season.
Yeah, this is something that we always have to deal with, people to take watches and warnings seriously, take action. There's a definite tendency of inertia that people have. You put, for example, a tornado warning. Put a tornado warning out. You need to take action. You need to go to a shelter. You need to go to an interior basement, something like that. But frequently, people, they don't see any impacts from it. So they think, okay, well, this has happened several times in the past. So why should I do anything now? And it's that keeping people to take action has always been a challenge.
Or it's not going to be me. I'm not going to die from this. I can cope with it even if it gets really hot. All right, it's going to get hotter according to this new study. The question is, what are you going to do about it to be able to mitigate it in whatever small way that you might be able to, including perhaps maybe even planting a tree, if it's the right tree to be planted where you want to plant it. That's a caveat. 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. We're going now to Lynn calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Lynn. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, aloha. Yes, I was wondering why you're not talking about green vertical walls. I know that they have been planting them in Canada, in Paris. The results are not only just stunning visually, but here's a whole apartment building or office space or store just covered in greenery. And so, yeah, I just have been very excited reading about some of those, and I thought, why aren't we doing this in Hawaii?
Well, good question. In fact, funny, I just got a whole book about creating a vertical gardens. But yeah, we have lots of concrete space potentials for doing that. The question is, how high is the interest to be able to make some of those green walls happen? Any sense of that from what you have seen?
I had the same question that you do have. I mean, I'm surprised that they haven't done that thing, because actually I see that as an opportunity. I mean, personally, if I did have the money, which I don't, I would totally buy an apartment that is totally covered on trees. You know, how cool it would be for you to wake up with some green in front of you, maybe some birds hanging out there while having your apartment cool. So, yeah, actually, that is something that just blows my mind. Why is it that we are not engaging more on making those buildings greener? And I mean greener not on the sense of having renewable sources of electricity, but actually having some trees hanging out from those walls. And the architects, I'm telling you, I have seen some designs of these buildings that they just look like jungles, you know?
We've got a lot of them that look like they're kind of, you know, glass jungles out there. It's hard to have a lot of greenery going down the glass.
Which is very interesting. I don't know the whole story, but I know that, for instance, here there are some regulations on how shiny those glasses had to be, because actually they accumulate heat and reflect heat, making the cities even hotter.
That's not good news either, but I know you wanted to jump in here too, John.
Go ahead. I was going to mention the green walls or green roofs or anything like this is a very useful way to help mitigate the urban heat island effect. Mm. That's essentially what we're talking about here as far as the heat in a city. Concrete, blacktop, all absorb heat much more efficiently or stay warmer for longer than, say, natural vegetation. So by putting plants or trees there, you not only cut down on the amount of exposed concrete, but you also have the natural process of the plant absorbing the sunlight and evaporating water and helping to cool. So there's a multiple benefits to this.
And you can do that even if you have a smaller patio, which, and many of them have the concrete block walls around them, that you can do little things that might make you feel better anyway, and maybe in some tiny way also make it a little bit better for the rest of us too. Going now to Robert calling us from Maui. If you want to be next, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Aloha, Robert.
Aloha. I have two questions. I had a question, but then you made a comment that I was wanting you to clarify. You were talking about the planting trees, and you were saying you don't want to plant the wrong tree in the wrong place or something like that. Could you explain exactly what you were talking about?
Just following on to what Camilo said a moment ago and what we've seen here on Oahu, where trees have been planted and their roots have come up and they've done, you know, a great deal of destruction. And so then those trees have been yanked out, and without the proper planning to make sure that you've got a tree that's going to grow in a certain way that will be beneficial, you could be planting the wrong tree. So it can't just be, you know, plant a tree, but you need to do a little bit of due diligence to find out where you're going to plant it and what kind of space it needs.
One thing that I would like to add to that, by the way, if you don't mind, is the fact that we need to have a plan. The government, the city, the mayor, the governor, I don't know, need to come out to develop this master plan that provides guidance to people. So just like you there, you want to say, okay, I want to plant a tree. What tree do I plant and where do I plant it? And what care do I need to have? Unfortunately, even developing that plan requires money. The reason why is because you need to integrate all of this knowledge that needs to go into that plan. You need to have the the people from biology that will tell you what species to plant there. We obviously want to plant native trees. We don't want to introduce more species. You need to have the urban planner that tells you, yeah, this is a good place. And then you need to have the architect, and then you need to have the person from the public service. So unfortunately, again, you need to have a lot of planning for that to be done well, so that hopefully that doesn't turn into a disaster that then can be used as an argument not to do it. So if we're going to do it, it needs to be done correctly.
All right, Robert, you had another question too, yes?
We're doing agroforestry on Maui, and so we've planted so many trees, and we're using natives, and we're using other fruit trees like that. So I don't think that that's a problem where we are, but it was just a curious comment, and just it seems more involved than it would. It's too bad that it's that involved, so that people, and at the same time, it's understandable so that people do the right thing. But one other question I was really wanting to hear about is this hurricane season that's been happening in Hawaii for the last 3 years. I thought I almost had a autoimmune disease in 2015 because it was so hot and I couldn't even work outside. I was really affected by it. Has the weather pattern changed significantly for Hawaii that we should be expecting an intense hurricane season the way we've seen the last 3 years? Is that just the way it's going to be from now on at the current level?
Well, kind of, it's hard to predict what from now on would be, but John, take a stab at that. I know we talked about hurricane season before.
Oh, sure. This is a common question that we get. There are a lot of things that go into whether we have an active season or whether we have a quiet season. One of those, El Nino, there's a big correlation. El Nino, warmer waters, a number of factors contribute to more seasons, more active cyclones in the Pacific. There's also a longer-term cycle, and we're going into a more active phase of that. It's called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. In the 70s, it was in quiet phase. 80s into the 90s, it was more active. Into the 2000s, it got into more of a quiet phase, and we're starting to ramp up into a more active phase of that. So when you get a few of those things adding together, you end up with a more active season.
So it's very hard to predict, but you can say what we might expect at least this time around and that you should hopefully be prepared to face.
Yep. Actually, this time around, forecast for Central Pacific is 5 to 8 tropical cyclones with equal chances of near normal, which is 4 to 5, or above normal activity.
All right. So take that as you will, and we would hope that you'd get yourself ready for whatever may come. Thanks very much, Robert, for the call. If you'd like to join us today on Town Square, we're talking about a study that came out on Monday forecasting greater heat waves for the world, not just Hawaii, but worldwide. What does that mean when you have a deadly heat wave forecast, and how can you do something to be able to mitigate it? The part of the study is showing that even with aggressive action, there's still a very high chance that about half the world's population is going to be affected by very high and deadly heat. So, have you read the study? Are you concerned about it? And what are you going to do to hopefully make the situation a little bit better so that we don't approach that terrible outcome that we were talking about a little earlier in the program? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Noi, calling from Honolulu. Aloha, Noi. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I was very interested in your conversation about, sort of spot planting plants in the urban area. And I'm working my way through the Kaka'ako area where the only thing they're really growing there is buildings. And the heat is already ramped up in that area because of the mirrors on the buildings. And I'm really curious about the discussion you're having about what proper plants you're going to plant. Like, I'm not hearing sort of designing solutions for the island context we have. Not kind of really sure how you talk about planting without talking about rolling back or measured development. And if there's any space in there for Hawaiian knowledge, like the reforesting of native Hawaiian plants in the uplands, things that generate rain, we know from like looking at our own culture, our own chants and, historical materials that Hawaiians cared for those forests and they were rain generators. We didn't necessarily need science to tell us that, but I'm just wondering if there's like design solutions for the Hawaiian context, it being an island, and if Hawaii can be like a kipuka in the world to sort of mitigate against those larger scale transformations.
I think that's in part why the study came out and was coordinated perhaps by UH. Noe, thank you very much for all the comments and the question. And I'll put it back to you, Camilo.
Yeah, actually, I'm telling you, I am Colombian, and I have been living here for 5 years already, and I feel this as home already. And I had this like dream that we can make Hawaii a place that is carbon neutral. You know, that is my ultimate dream. Make history here in Hawaii that we can show to the world that climate change can be fixed. What a dream will it be if we can demonstrate to the world that we can make Hawaii a place in which our emissions are totally neutralized by planting trees. And we have all of the mathematical equations there to show you that if every one of us choose to plant 10 to 20 trees a year, the carbon footprint that you have gets completely neutralized. Then I was thinking, okay, how difficult will that be? That will be around 20 million trees for Hawaii. Do you know what the people from India did last year? They came together and in one day planted 50 million trees. They broke the world record. 50 million trees in India planted in one day. How difficult will that be for a state like Hawaii? We had 1 million people here. We had tons of land that is not being used. That would require us to coordinate every individual here to go and plant 20 trees in one day. You can open the holes, I'm telling you, in half an hour, and our state will be green by tomorrow. All what we need is to have that coordination. We have been working very hard towards getting there. Unfortunately, again, it requires so much planning that, unfortunately, you need to have funding for even developing the plan. So people in the state wants to see the plan. Unfortunately, having the plan costs money already, so it makes the generating these guidelines very difficult. And again, I agree with you. We have plenty of land. We have plenty of species. We have 200 species here in the state that have less than 200 individuals, species that if something happens to them, the whole species goes extinct. So not only we have the land, we also have the species that are calling out for help for them to be planted on many places.
I hear you say that we could choose to do this, but because so much of this is happening in isolation and not well networked in an overall plan that would need funding for it, that the chances of being able to do this however quickly you would like to do it and could be potentially done is decreased.
That's right. Well, no, and the other thing is that we cannot rush this thing because there is a risk that if you rush it, it might totally fail. The analogy that I give to people sometimes not to rush this thing is what happens a few years ago with the Samsung 7 or whatever that phone was, that they rushed to production a phone because a battery was faulty. As a result of that, they lost $5 billion. You know, so those are the consequences of us rushing to production things that are not ready. So for this to work, it needs to be well planned. And here in Hawaii, we had a lot of resources, man. And thinking about people like John, their institution that can give you all data on the climate. We have people at UH that knows about botany, urban planning. You have all of the resources to make that happen here. Unfortunately, we need the state and the city, I suppose, to step in to lead this program, this plan, this master plan that provide guidance to people on what they can do on their places where they live.
We're going to take a few more callers if you want to join us. 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, that's the number to use, 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. Going to Mitzi, calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Mitzi. Thank you for your patience.
Aloha, and thank you so much for the most interesting show.
Pleasure.
My question is, we were just recently in L.A., and when we were driving around, we noticed that the streets seem to have more concrete in them. They're not just asphalt. Asphalt seems to also degrade quicker, and it's hotter. What are your thoughts about the streets?
Well, they're both looking at me like, okay, streets and concrete versus asphalt, we have a lot of.
So what happens is that many of these materials, they absorb different amount of heat depending on their colors. And the problem that they had encountered with asphalt is that because of the expansion and contraction, it cracks. So you need to spend a lot of money recycling those roads. So it turns very expensive. Concrete is more expensive, but it lasts longer. Unfortunately, you also have to reinforce it with steel. Because unfortunately, again, the heat makes these materials to expand. And when they expand, sometimes they touch each other and they start cracking. And again, this movement of getting bigger and smaller during the day and night when it gets hot and cold damages these materials. That is one of the things that happens there. And as John pointed out, they accumulate heat. And my concern is just the fact that just getting those materials that alone has a huge contribution to climate change already. Unfortunately, that's a reality that we need to live with, because I don't, but I mean, you need the roads. So I am also very realistic about the fact that some of these things are gonna happen. But again, you can have a nice road with some pretty nice trees like we had here in Kapiolani. You know, that's my favorite street in Hawaii, by the way, you know. You see civilization, but you see all of these trees, and the sunlight never makes it to the road. You know, I mean, I don't know. So that is, again, things that we need to start accepting. Those things are just going to happen. The question is whether we can make them less dangerous.
But to her point about asphalt being better than perhaps concrete, the fact that concrete is more expensive, we haven't seen a whole lot of concrete being used. It's more likely to be asphalt. We got a lot of blacktops.
I wish I knew more about the engineering aspect of it, the durability or the cost. But it was a very valid point too, that asphalt, blacktop, is very dark and will absorb more heat than a lighter colored material. Lighter colored material will reflect energy as well, and that asphalt will absorb it, heat up, and hold on to that heat for longer.
Some buildings are also going to putting a coating on their roof. You know, it's white or it's light, and there are companies that do that with the idea of being able to reflect heat, keeping it a little cooler, cooling it by a couple of degrees or however many they promise. Some people are saying, well, why not just, you know, what if everybody just did something like that?
Well, I'm sure that Johnny is going to have some feedback on this, but my thought, just quickly to interrupt in that, is why instead of paying the money to buy that paint, why you just don't put some plants on those roofs?
I'm pointing to Camilla. That was exactly the point I was going to make.
Well, good. I'm glad you both made it. We're going to move on, take some more callers if you want to join us. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Dr. Boogie, do I have that right? Calling us from Waikiki?
Hello, Beth Ann. This is Dr. Boogie.
Okay.
Hi. I have two thoughts and a question or two. One is, this whole climate change issue is it's both a global and a local problem. We're lucky here because our localness is so much smaller than trying to control the whole entire coast of a continent. We can't stop that. We can't stop global warming. We can slow it down. We aren't going to stop the ocean. It's bigger than we are. It's totally bigger than we are. So it seems like plans to mitigate that, the sea level rise, is silly and a big waste of money. It seems like we should A, be stopping the mechanisms in place that are causing the issues, which is going to be hard and lengthy in time, but doable, and plan for the water. Just plan for the water. Why not plan for wetlands? Why not plan for some inundation? You know, we got to worry about the almighty buck. But that's stupid, because the whole planet is going to take us out. It doesn't care about that.
All right.
In other words, why not make some of these wet estuaries that we built bloody buildings on look like Pearl Harbor or Hawaii Kai or Kahana Bay?
Well, in part, some of it is that, you know, you're talking about something that's kind of a done deal. When you already have lands that have been claimed for other purposes, your point is, well, looking forward, trying to do something. But what do you do to mitigate it right now?
Too bad. Too bad. Yeah, that sounds callous. But it's too bad because it's going to happen. The water's coming. Building 50-foot walls, that's not going to do it. In the end, it's not going to do it. Planting trees all over the place along the coast, we saw what happened with the mangroves. Water without oxygen is dead. So nobody grows in that water, and it doesn't help us either. It doesn't help the plants. It doesn't help the fish. Kills them. So I think we should just plan ahead and deal with it now and figure out how to slow it all down. But in the meantime, plan for it instead of going, oh, my God.
Well, there are lots of people who are trying to plan for it, and that's, you know, part of it. But in networking some of that planning, I think that's Camilo's point, that it would be really great if we could network some of these plannings better.
I think that your point goes to a different level, though. Like, the analogy that I try to use is, sometimes imagine that there is a bigger kid that keeps punching me on the face. You know, just strong the kid and just keep punching me on the face. And my solution to deal with that is to buy a protective gear so I don't feel so much pain. So when it comes to climate change, we want to accept to live with that pain. That's what we are doing with adaptation and the solutions that you are suggesting. No, I want to fix this thing from the start, just like I wish you to stop punching me on the face. I'm not going to protect myself of those things. And that's exactly dichotomy that we had today, whether do we accept that we're going to be living with this or do we try to fix it? And go back to the analogy of a kid punching you. Will you be willing to live with a kid punching you in the face all the time, or do you want that thing to stop right away? So we need to start making the same kind of decision when it comes down to climate change. Are we accepting right now that this is going to be a reality forever, or do we try to prevent those things of happening in the first place? And what I think is that this is the right moment for us to make that happen. Later on, it's just not going to happen. It's going to be way too late.
When you talk about preventing it from the first place, I think we're past that, aren't we? Because we're talking about already seeing buildings being built. They're not going to be raised and suddenly turning into a park. The fact that your study shows that you already have 30% of the world who have to cope with these incredible high temperatures, and that if even aggressive activity is taken or actions are taken, that we're still going to see maybe half of the world. So aren't we kind of past that beginning point?
Yes, that's right. And I mean, I agree with Dr. Boogie that this is just going to happen, and some things we just have to deal with those losses. And here in Hawaii is a good example. When you get these high tides, for instance, and you see these massive erosions of the roads and the houses. So yes, there is nothing that is going to fix that. But do we accept to live with that for the rest of our lives, or do we try to minimize that from down the road?
And do we rebuild in those very same places?
Another thing. Yeah, that it just doesn't make sense. Yeah.
All right, we've got lots of callers on the line. If you want to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Devin, calling us from Manoa. Aloha, Devin. Are you there?
I'm here. I was listening to the program, and one of your previous callers, she asked a question, and I don't really think that it was answered. And I think what she was asking was, in your planning, is there the ability to not just kind of see what we as people who may not be native, of this place, we come and we have our dreams and there are things that we want to do, and we have such great ideas in regards to what can help. But is there a place to kind of see what was already happening? Is there a place to see what was already going on? The people who were already here, what they were doing, how they were doing it, and how they were making this work for.
Okay, I think you're sort of putting us back to what Noe called about a little earlier and saying, is Hawaiian knowledge being brought into all of this? Do we know how certain plants would be attracting rain? Do we have a sense of that coming into this planning as well? And Camilo, you were mentioning certain things happening at the university, but that they're not necessarily networked as well as they could be if there were funding for it.
Yes. So again, that just goes back to what I was saying earlier about the need for this plan. And this plan, obviously, I apologize, I didn't include social scientists and anthropologists and native people, to gather all of that native knowledge. For instance, just to give you an example, sometimes I have this program, Planting Trees in the States, and I take my daughter there, and she prefers to watch TV, but I just take her to work with me on that thing. But one of the things being on those places that I realize is that we sometimes go and plant trees, and people is resistant to plant trees there. Most of these trees die. There have been old programs here in which they actually try to plant like a million trees, and of them, only a fraction survive. And why such a few trees survive? As I asked the question to some professors, and unfortunately, the professors will tell you the knowledge that they have, but unfortunately, we need to have that local knowledge to know a specific conditions on those places that makes those trees survive or not. And there is where we need the input of the native people that will tell you, you might think that there's a good tree to plant in there, but I'm telling you those trees will not survive in there. They know because they have planted and those trees had died, so they had their own experiences that we can benefit from. And again, that's exactly the point that I want to make, is the fact that we can benefit from all of that knowledge that we had here, but we need to develop that master plan. It's such a unique place for that to happen, and that's this place in Hawaii. We have all of the skills, and we are rich. It's not like you are in the middle of a country in Africa where you cannot afford to not work. Here, people is rich, and we have the willingness, too. This is one of the best places that I have seen people completely engaged on being part of good solutions.
All right. Thanks so much for that and for all the calls. If you want to join us, there's still time, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. You talk about where trees can fail. For a lot of people in Kahala who have tried to plant trees only to find that there is not a whole deep level of soil there and you're going to hit coral, and only to find, you know, a lovely tree that goes on for a little while and then dies. That's exactly what you're talking about, knowing where you are and what kind of conditions exist there.
And that we had 800 species that are here, so I'm sure that out of the 800 that we had, there is one that will survive there. Yeah, so, and again, it's just incorporating that knowledge so that we don't make the mistakes that other people have done in the past.
And not just simply choose a tree because, oh, that's pretty.
Exactly. Some of those trees are just not going to make it there.
All right, we're going to go to some of our callers now. Going to Ka'io, calling us from Maui. Aloha, welcome to Town Square.
Hi, aloha. Thanks for having me on.
A pleasure.
So I'm a Native Hawaiian plant specialist here on Maui, and I work as an independent contractor for Hawaii Agriculture Research Center, where they have done the fusarium-resistant koa tree studies, and we plant seed groves for future reforestation throughout the state. But I have a couple of comments in regards to this master plan, and my thoughts on it are, it starts from pretty much point A, where it's plant identification, and so many people have no idea what our native plants and species look like. And then it goes into knowing the times where these are seeding and proper seed gathering procedures, and then into the propagation. And individual species have very different ways of propagating. And in that time, getting the site ready and prepared for plant out when the plants are ready to be planted out, depending where it be mauka or makai. And also, I really feel that it's important to plant the seeds with the keiki, because they are going to be the future. And for them to know and to feel the different elements of the kuleana that is theirs for our island's future as far as watershed and forest and the native plants. And I think that a master plan like this is very necessary. There are individual groups that make a big difference. I mean, we propagate and plant out over 100,000 native species each year throughout the state, and that just comes out of Maui alone. And on climate change and global warming, we have seen it. And even our planting schedules have changed, where we would normally try to plant out during the beginning of the wet season, which would be October through December. Now our summers have that afternoon rain on a consistent basis, so we're bumping that up to planting out in the higher elevations, August and September.
Forgive me for interrupting you, but I just want to ask you a quick question, because clearly some of this knowledge is being held in pockets and collectives and people who are doing this, but is there any nonprofit that you know, or is there any place where all of this would be available to somebody online to be able to begin to approach that? Because everything you've described sounds like a lot to someone who finds themselves looking at wanting to do something but very unsure how to start. And then hearing all this, it sounds almost daunting to someone if they couldn't look at some place and find some good information.
You know, I don't know of a particular nonprofit or organization that breaks it down in this way. And that's something that I personally am wanting to work on and create.
Well, I wish you lots of luck with that, because I can already hear the need from people saying, where do I go? How do I find out? I want to help, but I don't know how. And it's always tough when there's a stopping point right there. But thank you for all the work that you're doing on Maui and for all the information that you shared with us. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Rachel, calling us from Hawaii Kai. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, Beth Ann. So when you guys were talking about concrete versus asphalt, this is something I heard or read about, that they have plastic roads, which I love, because it takes the recycling of plastic and it creates roads that last better that, well, potentially, I don't know. It's something that apparently exists. It would be something that, I don't know, cost-wise or anything, whether it would be something that would be usable in Hawaii, but I just wanted to put that out there.
All right, Rachel, thanks very much. I mean, people coming up with ideas, solutions potentially, but we don't know what those what the research is on those plastic roads. I mean, I'm looking at both of you, and I don't think either one of you has that, or how they would fare in heat and humidity and how quickly they might break down or how they would have to be maintained. So we'll have to hold that one for another conversation. Going to go now to, who are we going to now? Okay, we had a shy caller who phoned a little while ago from the Big Island and said that palm trees sequester twice the carbon of regular trees because they always have green leaves, and we have lots of those here. Can't comment on that, whether that is essentially true or not, but the idea of planting something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that knowledge is pretty solid already. You know, we had multiple web pages that already tell you, if you plant this given tree, how much carbon is going to store. Like, my favorite tree is, like, the koa, you know. Like, I am not from here, so I didn't know too much about the biology. But it's a species that is pretty slow to grow. But once it grows, I mean, that thing is going to suck a lot of CO2 for you. So, and again, we had 800 choices here in the state, and all of those native species that will help you sequester a lot of carbon. So,
where are you looking to find that, though? I mean, if somebody's hearing you talking, saying,
we don't have that. But again, I just caution people on the damage, on the potential risk of just going and planting a tree in the wrong place. You know, the person that you spoke earlier mentioned all of the conditions that you need to have in place just from the ecology of the species. But I'm telling you that there is a lot of stuff about the geography of the places, the cultural aspects, the urban planners, so that we don't plant trees on the wrong places. As you point out, I might have the best intentions of going and planting a beautiful tree here, but if they are planning to build a building there, that tree is going to be cut down. So what are ways of energy and resources to plant trees on places that they just don't belong? So yeah, that master plan, as the person earlier mentioned, is complex and it requires a lot of expertise. And unfortunately, we need to have all of that so that plan works perfectly.
We're coming up to the top of the hour, and I want to just refocus on the study that you did that came out this week. And clearly, in a week where you've been receiving calls from all over the world because there are heat waves happening right now, the point that you wanted to really hit home, I think, is the fact that we are dealing with this right now. And you can't look at this as a future thing. Even though you target the year 2100, there has to be efforts right now, and that what those efforts are could be some of the things that we've talked about earlier in the program, but to be mindful and aware that it's not just some of the climate change where we talk about sea level rise and we talk about warming, but the warming that brings the kind of heat waves that you've mentioned that are deadly, where people die, thousands of people who have died in these heat waves, that's got to be on our minds right now. How do you want people to not forget some of this stuff when the news cycle resurges? What is it that you want them to walk away with?
The work that I do is pretty depressing, to be honest with you. I mean, every time that we study the impact of humanity on nature, we already know in advance that we're going to find something bad. But one of the things that make me super excited is just, for instance, just to look at the reaction of your listeners. You know, despite the fact that the government is doing whatever it wants to do, you still had a lot of people that is eager to be part of this. You know, we go into our planting activities on the weekends sometimes, and I just get so excited to see all of these excited people and the kids, you know. And obviously the children, we need to push them to go outdoors instead of being plugged into an iPad. And as somebody said earlier, we need to have those children gaining property, ownership over on landscapes. And we have such a great opportunity to make that thing happen here in Hawaii. So the future is pretty bright, I think, despite the fact that it's pretty hot right now.
We're going to go to one more caller. We've got Murphy calling us from Haleiwa. Aloha.
Hi, how are you, Bethed?
Hi there, doing pretty well. Now, you wanted to talk a little bit, as we're talking about trees, and how they might be able to mitigate some of the potential heat that we're going to see.
Yes, I'm in Haleiwa, right by the McDonald's. There's a river. We got those rivers going down the Wailua River here. And if people throw coconuts. There's some stuff growing on the sides. People like to clear it out if it's needed there. You know, I'm looking out my window going, like, wow, there's all this vegetation right here. That the rivers feed it, supply it water, you know. If it's needed, I don't know if it's a lot of, you know, it's not used. It's just on the banks here of the river. And if it needs to transport somewhere, I don't know how it's going to be transported, but it's just a lot here on the rivers here on the North Shore. There's just a lot of vegetation.
Well, true, but you also run some risk when you try to transplant big trees once they get to a certain point, which is why starting them from seedlings, et cetera, have been more preferable, why we heard earlier from some of our callers about how that needs to happen. We're going to close up the hour in just a couple of minutes, but as we look at heat indexes and having a real understanding that in Hawaii we need to, yes, be drinking more water and taking care of ourselves, but understanding that you need to check a heat index, that you need to know that it's not just the temperature today, but what's the humidity, what's the nexus of humidity and temperature, and what does that mean when you see those numbers like over 105?
Right. The heat index just gives you an idea of how the humidity will factor into the temperature and how it feels. 105 is what we usually use as a threshold for particularly for extreme caution. It's dangerous. And when it gets above 110 or 115, then you're getting into those deadly levels where you really should curtail activities. Heat season for us is really year-round because it could happen anytime. You hear a lot about this now during the summertime since it's happening elsewhere in the mid-latitudes. But for us, it's a year-round thing we have to be cognizant of as far as when you do activities outside, make sure you stay hydrated. Try not to do strenuous activities in the middle of the day. Things like that to help your body stay cool and not overheat.
And in terms of what you can do as you move forward and try to figure out ways to potentially mitigate some of this heat going forward, you mentioned about looking up and trying to figure out what can you do in your own particular space. For a lot of people who are in homes, they're going to have a lot easier time doing this than somebody who is in a condo that's banded by glass. What would you tell those people?
There are multiple opportunities, and there are NGOs all over the islands that are planting trees. Personally, I will just prefer the state to start developing this master plan that provide guidance to people that you are talking about there. It's all of these people that is eager to do something, but I encourage people not to go and do it, though, because, again, that can turn out into something pretty bad. You don't want to introduce a species, transport potentially a disease to another place, so we need to be cautious about doing this thing, which is the reason, again, that I encourage the state, the local city, mayor, governor, I don't know, to develop this thing. People is eager to help, but unfortunately, we need to have that plan for it to be done well.
Yeah, I hear you say that you want to be able to marshal all of this excitement and enthusiasm, but also people need to do their due diligence and figure out, really, if they plant something, if it's going to be detrimental or if it's going to be a real help, and that we need a plan to be able to network this. But in the absence of the state, in the absence of money to do that, how do you keep people from
We are doing it. I am doing it myself. I'm telling you, I'm just not going to wait for this to happen.
Right. So
right
how
now,
do people be like
we had a project called the Carbon Neutrality Project. It's run by my lab. And what we do is we go to schools, we introduce the concept of climate change, and then we say to the kids, okay, let's go and fix climate change. And all the children say, yeah, let's go and do it. And that's our way to get the parents now to come and labor for us. And we take them, all of these families, to go and plant trees there. It's pretty slow, and I don't want to take this thing to the next level because, unfortunately, even that requires some planning. We are doing it. This is just going to happen, I'm telling you. And I have been surprised to find out how many people is already engaged on actively helping to restore this. But this needs to be done well, though.
Well, we hope you continue to do it well, and that you have even more people coming to you wanting to not just plant trees, but find out more about the study, which I'll post on my Facebook page. We posted earlier on the conversation, but that's back a ways now since it was on Monday. I'll post it again on my Facebook page, and you can have a look at Camilo Moro's study. And thanks very much to John Bravender. Appreciate you being here and giving us a real understanding of what some of the indexes mean and how we really need to take some better care of ourselves and understand that heat and humidity can kill, too. Thanks very much for coming to us from the Central Pacific Hurricane Center. And thanks to all of you, too, who called in with your questions and your comments. I'll see you tomorrow right back here at 11 o'clock for The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.